Good afternoon, everyone. Sawadee krap. All the speakers did that, I couldn't resist. Even though I must admit that's exactly one half of my Thai knowledge, so I will save the other half for the end of the presentation. The rest will be in English. Today I'm going to talk about the Linux and open source solutions, especially as it applies to Microsoft Azure. It's actually interesting, I've been here since morning and I watched all the previous presentations. And one thing I noticed, and that was really like a delight for me, every single speaker was talking about open source, believe it or not. I mean, like if you really start to remembering, you know, the previous presentations, the thing about IoT or the presentations about data science, you know, it's actually started with open source, right? And also Satya was talking about open source. And so that's why, in a way, like, it's really good to be concluding this session, you know, the whole day talking about open source solution, and it's important to Microsoft Azure because I think you are already convinced in that after the whole day of today's speakers. So, but let's start talking about why it matters for Microsoft in the first place, right? So it's actually realization that came to us at Microsoft a couple of years ago that if you're looking at the infrastructure of a typical Microsoft customer, or any customer for that matter, it looks something like that. So it really depends at on many factors, and the infrastructure of a typical company really is built over time, right? So you see there, so maybe there was a time when we had Windows or Office infrastructure, or at different point of time, somebody deployed Oracle database, or there was Java, or whatever was really a solution that the customer needed at that particular time, right? So it's, maybe it was really, you know, the choices were made depending on the fashion of the day, right? Or which tool was available, which tool was the most popular at the time. But it doesn't really matter, because over time, you know, as these decisions are made, whoever runs this infrastructure for the company, they will just have to maintain it, you know, onwards. So there is no point in time where these decisions are really revised. So whenever somebody chooses a particular product or a platform, the company has to stay with it for a long period of time. Sometimes, you know, 10, 20 years, maybe longer, you know, like there was this popular stat that if you are running, you know, banking solutions today, the chances are every time you are using a credit card, there is somebody running, you know, COBOL or CICS transactions somewhere in the back end, and that's like technology of 1960s or 1970s, right? So it's really no point in discussing, you know, how it came to life, that particular infrastructure. The question is, how do we run it? How do we support it? And especially now that we are seeing this trend of going to the cloud, how do we migrate all of that kind of a zoo, right, to the cloud? So, and that's where we really started our discussions within Microsoft. And for us, obviously, the answer to the cloud is Azure. And it's actually from the very beginning, from the very first days of Microsoft Azure, Windows Azure originally it was called, we were supporting open source. We were running Linux workloads. Now, but let's talk also about Azure and the cloud and why it really matters, again, from the point of view of, say, infrastructure and CIO, right? Somebody who runs, or chief technical officer, somebody who runs infrastructure in a typical company. So the chances are if in a relatively big company, there is its own data center. So it could be actually physical, like literally like server, hardware, and somebody is running that and, you know, running around and making sure that all of that stays online. Or it could be virtual, like in the past 10 years, there was more and more trend toward using virtualization. So you are not owning hardware, you're not owning computers, you're just running it somewhere in the data center that somebody else runs for you. However, the questions that we are asking ourselves is really, so, okay, so we started virtualization. Is that it? Can we do anything better with that? Okay, so is it cheaper than to run this way infrastructure as we did it in the last 10 years? Is there anything else that we can do? Or, you know, my data center is actually running out of capacity. What to do about that? So do we buy more hardware? But it's an internal race, right? You can be buying hardware every day. Or you can find out, especially as bigger organizations, like if you're running a company that's more than 1,000 people, very often you would find that particular business group runs something on their own. And the chances are, if they're already running on their own, if they're not coming through the IT operations, they're running it in the cloud because it's the fastest and the cheapest way to start something, right? You don't have to buy anything. You know, usually like a credit card or a company account is enough to start. So people are consuming this cloud, sometimes even without, you know, kind of direct approval from the bosses. So, and it's really becoming a question, so maybe can we stop doing some of these things? Like, maybe we don't have to do all of these infrastructure management in the company. And it's a good question, especially if you're running a large infrastructure. So for us in Microsoft, the answer for that question is actually that you don't have to choose, first of all, right? So it's perfectly fine to run your own data center infrastructure and to use public cloud. So you can be actually using some of that infrastructure that we are creating in Asia global data center spread all around the world. And you can be using, you know, compute, storage, and network, and anything else. And you can be using these platform services for security and management and hybrid operations. And you can actually run the same type of infrastructure in your organization as well, on your on premises. So you can be running exactly the same type of software in your own data center on premise with Azure Stack and cloud platform, and to manage the whole infrastructure with products such as System Center or Operations Management Suite. So in a way, you don't have to choose. You can run some of that on premise. And for example, there are quite often requirements, legal requirements, like you cannot store personally identifiable information in the cloud. In many countries, there is a laws for data residency, right? So that you have to store critical data at least in the same country, and better if you're storing them in your own organization. So you can be running that on premise or in your data center. You can be running some of that global capacity in the public cloud to run, you know, if you are constrained or for your need, sudden peaks. For example, if you are a store, right? If you are electronic online store, quite often you are only running at full capacity 2 or 3 times a year. Okay, so like for example, end of the year, Christmas scenario, these kind of things, right? Or like, you know, sales. Most of the other time you don't need it, but you don't want to invest for the maximum capacity throughout the year. So then you're using public cloud for these kind of peaks and bursts. And actually, you can even have software as a service in the center. So things like email, things like Office 365, and other solutions that you can literally take off the shelf. You don't have to run them on your own. Maybe you don't really want, for example, to run Exchange as an infrastructure. So it's very interesting that if you're looking at Microsoft, we really provide these solutions on all three parts of these diagram, right? So we provide solutions in the public cloud with Azure. We provide solutions on the left side of this diagram with the on-premise and Azure Stack and the infrastructure management software. And we are providing a lot of these software as a service solutions such as Office 365 or CRM Online and so on and so forth. I think, by the way, Microsoft is pretty unique in that. So I think Microsoft is probably the only company today that can offer solutions on all sides of that spectrum, right? And boy, we need to switch Twitter off there. This thing, if you're talking about the other companies, like, I don't know, other companies that are working in public cloud, Amazon, that would be completely on the right. If you ask Amazon, their answer is it should be all on this in the public cloud. But it's not the answer for everybody, right? Or it could be something if you're talking about HP and IBM, they would probably talk to you that you want to run it on premise. But again, it's not the answer for everybody. So it's actually what makes Microsoft unique. So we actually have quite a bit of already experience with running Azure. And there are really impressive numbers with, you know, in the millions and billions and trillions. I'm not even going through all of these details here on the slide. You know, you can read it. But it's really the case that, in a way, Microsoft was prepared to become this kind of a global infrastructure company many years ago. Actually, the first time that Microsoft started going into that direction was when we purchased Hotmail many, many years ago, like 15 years ago, right? That was the first time when we were really running global infrastructure with millions of users that was eventually, that would become a cloud, right? So today we are running more than half of the Fortune 500 companies on Azure, and we are running trillions of messages every day with Event Hub. And I'm sure after the previous presentation that you know, my colleagues were showing about IoT, we'll be running a little more of them. And yes, we are growing faster than the competitors. So it's actually, this slide talks about our global footprint. And again, it's also something that many people do not realize. I think globally, there are maybe three or four companies that really have the same scale as Microsoft, not more. It's a very small race for the cloud, with people really, you know, like companies like Amazon and Google and Microsoft, and that's pretty much it. So the question is really, how do we get this scale, right? It's a huge investment. It's actually, it's interesting that we have more regions, like places where you can deploy your Azure solutions than both Amazon and Google combined. So in terms of the choice, Microsoft today provides more of these options than anybody else. And we have one of the biggest networks in the world that runs that. We also have the G series, one of the largest virtual machines. Even though, by the way, I think right now it's a race with Amazon. They also published a new virtual machine literally 2 days ago. I think it will be the eternal race. Just to give you an idea, a different way of looking into that is that we add more servers every day than the total number of servers that we added in all of the year 2011, every day. It's literally the way we are designing for this scale is completely different. So, okay, well, how that all relates to open source? So it's really a thing that, you know, I think we started that investment many years ago, and now everybody started paying attention, right? So I just pasted some of these quotes from the newspapers and the web publications, but you could do like maybe a couple of pages like that every day today. So yeah, and I especially like this screenshot here in the center with our CEO Satya and Microsoft loves Linux. That was kind of unthinkable a couple of years ago, right? So it's really you're completely different, and yeah, like you're saying, like this is not your dad's Microsoft. I've worked in Microsoft for 13 years now, and also for me that's been quite a change, right? So conversation with Linux completely, and the tone of our conversation has changed over the last few years. So in the past, we were really talking about, okay, well, you know, there is a Microsoft way and there is a Linux way. And, you know, and we thought we knew the best way, right? So I think that really no longer applies. And it's really the case that we all agree that both of them will coexist for foreseeable future, both the closed source and the open source. And it's not like one business is better or worse than the other. They really will be coexisting for a long time now. And the most interesting thing is that actually, if you are looking at the Microsoft history, and okay, I apologize, it's a little small, so it's not supposed probably to be readable, but our first engagement with open source started many years ago. So with things like our contribution to Novell, when we were talking about just networking, we were trying to make sure that network is supported by things like SUSE Linux, for example, right? Or our first contributions to ePHP, or making sure that our first contributions to Apache and Hadoop would take place. So it's, I think it started to accelerate about 6-7 years ago, in about year 2009 or 2010, where we started contributing to open source solutions. And actually, if you're today in Microsoft, there is a special form every time you're starting a new project, there is a special form and request for people to ask whether this particular product that you're just starting to develop, if it has to be open source or not, okay? So every single product that's being developed by Microsoft today is being considered for open source. So, and we are one of the most active contributors in open source today worldwide. So we also started opening up our core products like ASP.NET or .NET itself, the .NET Core. This is Microsoft, this is not third party, right? In the past, for example, there was also this Project Mono where people were implementing an open source solution of .NET, which eventually the developer of that project became, you know, the Xamarin, right? So the company that was also presented with a multi-platform solution. So today, this is really, there are more than 2,000 projects on called Plex and GitHub. And actually, on one of the further slides, I will show the numbers of our contributions on a daily basis. So Azure is really today an open cloud, and Linux and open source solutions are first-class citizens in this cloud. So it's actually quite a big slide, and also open source is different from Microsoft stack, right? Like if you would try to draw Microsoft stack here, you would just have like one vertical, right? You have Windows, you have SQL Server, you have .NET, Visual Studio, and that's about it, right? Microsoft stack is pretty straightforward. Open source world is different. There are hundreds of different companies and communities, some of them not even companies, right? And it's much more fragmented. However, we are supporting the open source, all of these products that are and platforms that are on this slide, they are first class citizens on Azure. You can run them on Azure, you can literally take them off premise and move them to Azure and it would just run. So it takes us a lot of effort. There is a huge engineering team in Microsoft that's focused just on that. So, one of the latest of that development was that we signed an agreement with Red Hat. Why we are also doing that, it's not just because we want to support this particular products, it's because we are also seeing the trend. And the trend is that a lot of the innovation actually comes from the open source as well. So I listed here four of these trends, and actually there are there are many products and projects behind each of them, but I just want to walk through them a little bit. The first one being next generation architecture and containers. So this is, maybe not the best illustration, but the idea of container as an entity where you can run instead of the virtual machine on a much more isolated scale and a smaller scale, and it really becomes a topic for everybody. So it kind of just decreases the cost of running the infrastructure. The next thing is managed services and big data. So things like Hadoop, and there are many companies that are running open source implementations of Hadoop. So one thing I can tell you, I'm really popular on Twitter after today's sessions, right? So if anything. So it's okay, once I get to the demo, I will switch it on. So, but yeah, keep boosting my ego, I really like that. So big data solutions like Cloudera or Hortonworks or Hadoop in general, right? So we actually did an implementation of HD Insight on Windows and now on Linux. But actually what we realized, and this is what Graham Williams was talking in the first presentation, is this is much bigger trend. We're seeing this explosion of data and analysis of data and kind of getting the insights. And what we know as well is that because it's the whole trend of big data is that you're analyzing literally trillions of records, right? That's how you generate insights. It's very difficult to run that on premise, just very expensive, right? So what you really start to do is you want to move more and more of that to the cloud, because almost none of the companies in the world, except for, I don't know, like maybe Walmart or something like that, will have capacity to run it on premise in the long term. So people start moving that to the cloud. So that's also an interesting thing. And it all started in open source as well. The next thing is DevOps. And things like Chef and Puppet and Vagrant and other tools that really start to change the way we develop things. Like in the past also, like the way that was running on the Visual Studio until recently was pretty straightforward cycle, but there was a bit of a break between when you're developing and between and your deployment of your developed solution to the production environment. It was always a tricky point. Like everything works on staging environment, and then you move it to the production, everything breaks apart. And well, I think we were all there as a developer, so nobody liked that. So they can, again, I think it's partially based on containers and partially built on the new tools, such as Chef and Puppet, that really automates it and makes it more kind of transparent. And the last one is Internet of Things. Like after the previous presentation, I think I'm not going to talk much more about that, but I think we all agree that this is the trend of today, with the billions of devices joining internet and working with that every day. All right, so talking about our momentum, and I will just build the whole slide so that you can read it while I'm talking about that. So one of the first announcements that I have here is actually SQL Server on Linux. This is also pretty dramatic. I think it's the first major first-party product that Microsoft publishes on Linux. It's already available in the preview. You can actually try that. It's going into general availability next calendar year. And this is the first time that we are releasing our own product on Linux. That one is a partnership with Red Hat. I have it on the next slide, so I'll skip that. We joined the Eclipse Foundation. Actually, another interesting thing on the right side of the slide is also like the president of Apache Foundation is a full-time employee of Microsoft today, Ross Gardler. And by the way, he does amazing videos on Channel 9, so I really recommend you to watch that about things like, you know, again, Docker or other advances that we have in the open source world. Another employee that just joined Microsoft relatively recently, about 2 months ago, Wim Koykerts. He was actually the guy behind Oracle Linux for many years, I don't know, like 10, 15 years. Right, so he's now joined Microsoft, and actually he has a whole team reporting to him in a product group. So they are developing new products, and they're making sure that Microsoft products are really working well with open source. Bash and Windows Subsystem for Linux. I mean, Windows Subsystem for Linux is probably not the best name in the world. I mean, like, we are famous for naming conventions that are resulting in a long name. So, but basically, yeah, like Bash and Windows. This is something that we announced at Build 2 months ago. And this is pretty dramatic. And also from the point of view of pure engineering, I didn't believe it was possible until I saw that, right? Because there is, in order for us to run that on top of Windows, there is the whole subsystem. Like Bash really thinks it runs on Windows, on Linux. And there is this subsystem that actually translates all of the calls and makes sure that it plays together with the Windows. It's really amazing. It's really cool. Certification for Linux on Azure. Again, this is something new. So we always had the certification for Microsoft and also certification on Azure. But now we're also aligning that with Linux Foundation. And for those of you that don't know what Linux Foundation is, it's actually, that's the company that was set up, the foundation that was set up to make sure that Linus Torvalds can work. Actually, I mean, it's one of the things that's written in their charter, that one of the goals of the Linux Foundation is supporting the work of Linus Torvalds, right? So we actually work with them together to create this certification where you're passing one exam for Linux Foundation certified system administrator and one exam on Azure. Asian Marketplace, I will be showing that later today, demoing that. And yeah, like 60% of that is of the images on Asian Marketplace today, they're Linux based. Literally 60%, and it's growing. Also, we were saying already for many years, like for more than a year, that 1 out of 4 virtual machines running on Azure is Linux based. Well, that number is actually much closer to one in three. It's actually, I'm pretty sure that by now it's already like every third virtual machine there is Linux based. The last line is actually the lines of code that we committed, and it's actually published on the Microsoft Open Source Hub. Every day, so you can see, I'm pretty sure it's actually grown since the time I was preparing this presentation. So there are millions and hundreds of millions of lines of code that we are pushing there. All right, so Microsoft and Red Hat partnership. So this is something that we signed a partnership with Red Hat in November last year. So it's pretty unique. Red Hat actually supports many different cloud providers. Microsoft is just one of them. But I think that our relationship with Red Hat is probably the deepest. So we are supporting Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I will show that literally right on the next slide. So we are also working with them so that they are supporting things like .NET on integration availability with Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Even support teams. support teams that we have with Azure and support teams at Red Hat, they're now integrated. So you can call, you know, Microsoft, ask questions about Red Hat, or you can call Red Hat, ask questions about Microsoft. And the thing is that the people that will be answering to you in the US, they're sitting in exactly the same building. Okay, and we're expanding that practice all over the world. All right, so since I was talking to about Red Hat, and since, yeah, like there is a huge Twitter campaign right now in the background, so time to switch to demos, okay? So I was showing the deployment of the Red Hat Enterprise Linux on Azure. So this is, okay, well, let's. Okay, well, yeah. Keep on doing that. It's actually the most unusual presentation I ever done, that's for sure. So this is my Azure portal, and as you can see, I am running a couple of virtual machines here. So I have a Red Hat machine that I just deployed. Actually, I will be showing to you also, like, the whole process is pretty straightforward. So if you're just going here and you're typing Red Hat, and you see the choices of the versions of Red Hat Enterprise Linux, we're only supporting three, so the latest one, 7.2, 6.8, which was published, I think, a week ago, just as Red Hat published that also relatively recently, and 6.7. So you can go through the process and, so for example, you can choose these, and Resource Manager Classic, both of them would work, and basically, by the way, one other interesting thing you have to know, especially if you're trying to deploy the Red Hat on your own subscription, so that Red Hat is actually a premium Linux image. So for example, if you're running your own free trial subscription, I've seen that Jirabat and, they were showing the trial subscription that you can get as part of Visual Studio Essentials, right? Be careful. If you really want to study Linux, choose anything else but Red Hat, okay? The reason being, if you're running Red Hat on your free trial subscription, it will get suspended the next day. The thing is that it's a premium subscription, meaning that we are paying licensing fees directly to Red Hat as a result of that. So you cannot use trial credits for that. So if you just want to study Linux, my suggestion is to choose something else like Ubuntu or CentOS or Fedora, anything really. Because they would be completely free. Red Hat is an exception. Yes, I did forget to turn off the notification. Thank you. So I've decided I will stick with that until the rest of the presentation, so keep on doing that. Thank you. So basically, the way that you do that is you just choose any name and the username and the password, and you will need to choose a resource group. Okay, let DevDay demo. And no, it's not that it'll get suspended. Your subscription will get suspended. And you can still turn it on with the credit card, just like I did here for this particular example. But basically, why I'm showing, by the way, you may also ask why I'm showing a Red Hat in that case. Because this is the place where really every enterprise, almost every enterprise out there is probably likely to use. It's really like, if you're looking at all the open source companies worldwide, there is only one company that's above $1 billion today, and that's Red Hat. Everybody else is way smaller. Actually, Red Hat is more than $2 billion today because they're also running other products like JBoss and so on and so forth. So like Red Hat owns enterprise. And also Microsoft is an enterprise company today. So this is why this partnership is so important. So, okay, so you can scroll over and choose whatever option is really like relevant for you. I will take the A1 standard, it's one core, and it's relatively cheap, and as I said, I'm paying that with my credit card in the end of the day, so yeah, that's probably a good idea. But you can also choose whatever you want. They also offer one of the biggest virtual machines for that ever, so then you can configure optional features. I'm not going to do that because the deployment of the Red Hat Enterprise Linux machine takes about 5 to 6 minutes. I only have 1 hour for the whole presentation, so I'm going to stop here at this particular moment and switch back to the virtual machine that I actually already deployed, but basically that's the process as simple as that. So I just don't want us to wait until the end of the deployment. So I will take this machine and I will try to show you like a simple demo scenario. Let's say, for example, deploying a web server on that. So I hope that internet cooperates with me because I need the IP address for that. So I'm going to use the one of my favorite SSH clients for Windows, which is PuTTY. But yeah, like again, you could use also Bash on Windows. We are struggling here with the connection, so yay, finally. So we copied it here, we will open that there, and here we go. So yeah, and actually let me make it a little bigger because otherwise you will not see much. So appearance change, let's say 16. Okay, so password, by the way, the default setting, of course, is that you're getting the root password, but actually it's not turned on. So for example, if you're doing something like that, you will see that actually I don't have the privileges by default, right? So you would need to, oh wow, that's quite a lot of that. It's printed there, but basically what it says is that so you need to be root to perform this comment. Actually, I was looking for that in the beginning. It says that at the end. Okay, so well, the fortunately is we're getting the root permissions by default as well. So, there are quite a bit of things there. So we can run YAML upgrade. YAML is there, the tool for you know, running the updates and also installations in general that's used on Red Hat and that line of the software. I just upgraded this. Just before the presentation, so this is already there. But what we want to do here is we want to install HTTPD and we are going to install e-links, okay? So then we're seeing that it's okay, it's only 14 megabytes. It's starting to download and install. And actually, as you can see, it's actually pretty straightforward and quick. Well, however, you need to know what you're doing, right? As usual with anything with open source, you really need to know the command line. By the way, how many of you here have ever worked on Linux? Please raise your hand. Like, oh wow, I was expecting a little more, right? By the way, those of you that did work with Linux, every time I make a mistake, and it was like 15 years before I started, I was working with Linux before Microsoft when I was teaching in university and everything. I got rusty, and I, since I moving into this role, I started to kind of get it back. But if you see mistakes, shout it out. So okay, so we installed the e-links and we installed HTTPD. So what we will next do, we need to enable that. So system control enable HTTPD. All right. So yeah, and that as well. So and we need to start that. Okay. So. I'm not sure how many of you have seen e-links, but this is like the text-based browser that's kind of the default, and welcome to e-links. This is the test page that you're seeing on the Red Hat web server by default. So you can see it works, right? So yeah, it's nice and lovely. The only thing I will tell you in advance, so I will try to open that in browser, and it will not work, and that's the way it's designed, okay? So it's not supposed to work because we actually have to also enable the ports there on in Azure. So basically there are two levels of defense. There is a firewall on Linux and there is inbound security rules on Azure. So we'll have to go to the resource groups, and what we will do there is we will get here and find that. Okay, well, that's actually quite a bit I have in this resource group. So let's find the correct security rules. So Red Hat HRTH here. And let's look at that. So inbound security rules. And okay, well, right now we have the only rule that's allowing the SSH there, because otherwise we would never be able to actually access that at all. So what we will do is we create another one for, let's call it default allow TCP. And okay, actually everything else there is already there. Okay, 80 port is the only thing port we need. We could have also restricted that to TCP only. it doesn't really matter if it's TCP or UDP, I will keep it like that. So it's actually deploying there. While deploying there, let's get back to our Linux implementation and actually turn on the firewall here as well. So firewall CMD permanent and add service equal HTTP, because otherwise it will not work from the Red Hat side. Okay, success, and the other one, firewall CMD, we will need to reload. And now comes the most interesting part where we are seeing, let's see if my demo is really having any success today, because we will have to go here, and if everything works well, yes, we are finally getting a web server. Thank you. I've been doing demos for like 13 years in Microsoft, right? Every second demo fails. I don't know why. Has nothing to do with me, seriously. So we did this, and that was, on one hand, you can say it was pretty straightforward, right? Like, okay, well, it was probably, 3 minutes that we did from the very beginning, minus deployment. I kind of cut out 5 minutes in deployment, so altogether probably would be, say, 7-8 minutes for deployment in Azure to the working Red Hat box and the web server there, okay, right? So nothing fantastic here, but actually, still, it works, and however, it's still, it's in a way, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of long, right? So in the next part of the presentation, I'll be probably talking about other scenarios where, you know, what you can do and how you can actually make it faster, and why open source infrastructure is really good for you. So the scenario that I was showing right now, that's what we call lift and shift, right? So basically, the most basic scenario, you're taking infrastructure, you are moving that to the cloud, okay? Nothing more. You could just as well install, for example, that Red Hat Enterprise or any other, like Ubuntu, CentOS, doesn't matter. You could run it on your own laptop and achieve the same results, and actually probably do it a little easier, probably. But in general, this is the first thing that comes to mind for the people who are running the infrastructure. So, and you can do it on Azure today. The other one is the one I mentioned, data on Azure, right? So for example, if you're running Cloudera or Hortonworks, Hadoop, you really want to move it to the cloud because you're running out of capacity. The next one is more complicated if you are just running, you're using Azure as a backend for your application, so things like web apps or logic apps, right? This is already a bit of a more integration there. The next one is just-in-time fabric and batch processing and, you know, scale sets and things like that. And I'm not going there simply for the sake of time, but this is also very important. And actually, this is probably one of the most interesting uses of cloud in general, because this is where you want a lot of computational power, right? So for example, things like rendering. If you're doing rendering, or if you're doing some really high performance computing computations, you just need hundreds potentially of the same boxes running in parallel, okay? So you really want to make sure that you can spawn them really quickly, and then you can also switch them off, and then they're not needed. So, and the last one is development and testing. So it's actually, all of these scenarios now are used in open source, and I'll just use one example from the customer. That's a customer here in Asia. It's Garuda, that's the airline in Indonesia, the national airline in Indonesia. And they actually did exactly that. So they had a ticketing system, online system, which is, by the way, I think one of the core things that they're running, right? Because if you're an airline, the most interesting interface with you, with the clients, is buying tickets, okay? And originally it was running on-premise, it was running on Linux as well, and it was running on PHP. So, but it didn't really work well in terms of the scalability, it didn't work well in terms of the security, so they really wanted to move it to the cloud. And they came to the partner they were working with, and the partner took that application and moved it to Azure. The first thing, like, it actually says here, the quote from the CIO of that company saying, like, it took them 6 weeks to do that. The first migration transition was actually just about 2 weeks. The rest of that time was spent more on kind of tweaking and making sure that it's optimized for the cloud. right? But the first time, you know, since they started the project to the time it worked there, it was literally just 2 weeks. So that's pretty straightforward, and it's pretty cool. By the way, it also gives you better accessibility and scalability, and you know, you can also deploy it anywhere in the world, really, right? So you are no longer tied to your particular market. So for example, if you're a company that's present in many countries, you probably want to have ability to deploy it in different data centers that are closer to your customers. So for example, which is the case for Garuda. They're obviously mostly Asian airline, but they also have clients all over the world, like in Europe and so on and so forth. Okay, so the next thing, and the last part of my presentation, I'm going to talk about containers. I'm not going to talk about IoT because Kun Fukiat just did an amazing job there, judging by your reaction. I mean, I didn't get too much because it was in Thai, but yeah, like I'm pretty sure it was a great talk. But I'm going to talk about containers. So this idea that I was showing to you, for example, the virtual machines, right? It's pretty cool that you can take that and run it. And by the way, I wish I had it when I was in a university teaching operating system many years ago, because it can save you a lot of the headache by installing, creating, deploying, and then just, and when you no longer need it, you can just stop it, delete it, right? It's much easier to do in the cloud than actually to do with the physical devices. And I remember from my times in universities that, you know, students were really, really one of the toughest audiences trying to break anything, right? So. So it's really like in the cloud, it's a little easier because it's easier to defend. As you've seen, there's many more levels of protections. And also you can actually restart it, like recreate it from scratch in a matter of minutes. However, for some scenarios, that's still too long, okay? So there are scenarios where you want much faster turnaround time. The primary example being development, right? And for that, so the idea that's really getting more and more popular is to use containers. So on this slide, I tried to kind of summarize the difference between containers and virtual machines. So the first demo that I was showing was with a full-blown virtual machines that are really running the whole operating systems and applications and frameworks and so on and so forth. Now, if you really want to make it lighter, you actually run it on the same host operating system, and you abstract away as much as possible. So basically, you can run it in an isolated sandbox. That's old idea. It's nothing new. I mean, in computer science, almost all ideas are not new, right? But this is really the new generation of that, where you're applying this to the cloud. So the idea is that you can take that container and you can create in a matter of seconds, not minutes. And that makes quite a bit of a difference. So let's also go back to the demo and talk a little bit about the deployment scenario. So. One of the things that I was showing in the first demo was just one virtual machine, right? Like with one product on that, very basic, like that was infrastructure as a service, nothing more. So what we will do now is we will show deployment of multiple images linked together in a single image on a virtual machine that you can immediately deploy it to Azure and run it without any further modifications. Okay, so like WordPress is one of the most popular products out there. So I will take this WordPress plus MySQL image that was published by Docker in this case. And actually, the interesting here on the right, you can see that it actually bundles quite a few of these images together. So you see Ubuntu server, you see Docker, you see WordPress, you see MySQL. And by the way, if you're really meticulous, you would have to read all the legal agreements. I'm not going to do that. So again, I will show you that the process for creating that is pretty simple. So it's literally like wizard. So password, name, Docker demo 2, because again, I already have demo 1, password. By the way, another interesting thing I wanted to point out, from the mistakes, in many places, in most places in Azure, you're only being asked to give that password once, okay? So be careful. Then nobody ever checks for the second time that you're retyping that and you're typing that correctly. So if you did a mistake, the only thing you can do is actually kill that and recreate from the very beginning, which is what I had to do a couple of times, if you're trying to do that really fast. So, and again, you're going through the process, creating, choosing the different sizes, and Yeah, like A1 probably would do for me. Let's select that. Actually, there are more settings in these cases. And also, you will see that there are extensions, for example, that we would be running, and different availability. Let's just get back through the wizard until the end for once. So you'll see the fun summary that, yeah, well, we can create it. Again, I'm not going to do that. I will just go back to this particular virtual machine that I already created. Again, deploying virtual machine always takes like 3 or 4 minutes at least. So for the demo, that's too long. So this is the virtual machine that I created just before this presentation. So again, let's take, by the way, we no longer need this. So we'll exit from the root. We will exit from the default user as well. The only thing I need is an IP address. And we will be on our way. Well, maybe, maybe not. While it's actually doing that, you know, one other thing I wanted to show, because that's pretty cool, is Resource Explorer. I'm not sure how many of you have seen it. Not only that we're using open source operating systems, or we are using open source products, but we are also using open source open APIs. Every single API you will be encountering in Azure is actually open, and there is the whole documentation behind it. So if you're typing resources.azure.com, like here, you will actually get to that page. This is where you can explore your own subscriptions on Azure, and actually you can see all of these virtual machines, all of the resources. So for example, here you see I went through the level of subscriptions. I have two different subscriptions. I choose this one. I went into the resource group where I'm pasting all of my resources. And then I went for that virtual machine that we created for Red Hat. And for example, what we can do is that, you know, we can deallocate that because we no longer need it right today, and that demo is over. And literally, you can explore all of that APIs, and you can actually create, like, force the commands right from here, right from your browser. You don't even need to go to your Azure portal, which is pretty neat. So for developers, it's actually a cool way of exploring the whole. And by the way, there is also JSON behind it, and so on and so forth. OK, let us kill that. So we don't need that. We only need this address, copy it. So we go back to our SSH client, and again, I forgot to make it a little bigger. Let's do that. Apply, okay, well, I hope now you can see that. So we're running Docker here. So, and you can see basically, we just, I didn't do anything with this thing, that it came out of the box like that. So you have WordPress, you have MySQL, they're sitting in two different containers. They're also connected together by Compose. So you can actually now, literally, unlike in the previous scenario, you can just take your IP address, and you will get WordPress start page immediately. So the moment you deploy it in Azure, right, you didn't do anything. You didn't update any rules, inbound security, none of this stuff. It just comes out of the box, and actually you can click continue. And so that we just showing that this is, again, okay, well, actually, I remember it requires the address and install. And a few seconds later, it will probably get us like, this is your starting page. Okay? So, let's now remove admin. We don't need it anymore. And by the way, I will never be able to access that because I forgot to save the password, but that's okay. I can recreate it from the beginning. So, but you see that in this scenario, it was much faster, right? So, in a scenario when we are doing everything from scratch, and which is probably the way most open source people would like it to do, right? So like I had many conversations with open source developers, and they don't trust anything that they didn't build with their own hands from the very beginning, from scratch, okay? However, in some scenarios, you want to make it faster. So these kind of packages where you have multiple images bundled into one and deployed immediately from Azure Marketplace and ready to use from the beginning, they can save you tons of time. Now, the more interesting thing is that, so this is where I'm talking just about how we can get an image consisting of multiple images within. the way there it's brought together, as I showed to you, is by Docker, right? And so you can actually say something as well, like, I don't know, Docker pool Ubuntu, for example, and if everything goes well, it goes into the, yeah, okay. It will go and download another copy of Ubuntu and put it in a different container, which is also pretty cool. So don't forget, this thing is running on Ubuntu server today, right? And then we are pulling another instance of Ubuntu, and we can run it separately, completely isolated from the operating system itself. Actually, it's already there. It's, so if you're doing Docker PS and showing everything, and it doesn't show. How about this? Okay, and now, yeah, okay, you see it's there. So it's really, as you can see, like downloading Ubuntu and launching that in a container took us literally seconds. Downloading and launching virtual machine on Azure took us minutes. That makes it all the difference. So every time, for example, you're in a development cycle, you're creating something and then you want to test it, right? So you're deploying that in a container. In a matter of seconds, it really can become a part of your building routine, and you can check it, immediately. Like, it's very immediate. So that's why containers are such a powerful idea. So let me get back to the presentation. There are hundreds of stacks like that. Like, I was showing Docker, so WordPress plus MySQL running in Docker. But there are hundreds of other images that you can choose from in Asian marketplace today. For example, on the right here, I showed just the images coming from one partner, Bitnami, right? So they more than 100 images that they're running for all the typical scenarios. If you want to run anything like, you know, Angular, you know, Postgres, SQL, you know, or if you want to, you know, MongoDB and so on and so forth, you can have all the stacks ready. You don't have to do anything. You can just run them. So, and that's one of the reasons why more than 60% of the images in the marketplace today are already open source. Okay, a lot is actually happening. So it's, as I said, open source is an enormous source of innovation. So there are things like next generation architecture and managed services and DevOps, and we will see more and more of these coming online, you know, in the next year or two. So I think for us it was really the question, there was no question, we have to support that. So all of that is now running on Azure, and we are in a close contact with the developers of this product, and we make sure that the latest versions of that runs. However, the question that you have to ask yourself, are you prepared to deal with the open source innovation, right? Even if you're having nothing on open source today, or if you're a student studying in a university, right? I think there is a lot of you know, reasons to start looking into that direction and actually start studying these tools and processes and practices, because a lot of what's coming on online in the next years will be coming from the open source ecosystem. So with that, I'm almost at the end of my presentation. So there are a couple of things, that, like pointers to the information where you can you know, find out more information. So for example, we do have a blog and a website. So Microsoft Openness is where you you might want to start. It's actually a global website for everything that Microsoft has to do with openness, open source and standards and so on and so forth. There is also the blog that we are running here in APAC, where you can, for example, find these case study with Garuda, with much more details, or the stories about the events, or the like information about upcoming trainings and webinars. So I suggest you to take a look there. There is also Microsoft Virtual Academy. And this is also very interesting, and don't be kind of misled by the word Microsoft there as well. So this is actually Microsoft Virtual Academy, and I just searched for Linux, right, from the very beginning, from the first page of MVA, and you can see there are literally dozens of courses, and some of them are very long. Like, for example, I remember these running Linux on Microsoft Azure. That was a series of 8 lectures, 1 hour each, which is quite a lot, okay? But there are also more of the introductory or labs type scenarios that you can walk through and recreate, also using, for example, free trial subscription on Azure, so you can recreate your own open source solutions. And they're usually like, I don't know, 15, 25, 30 minutes long labs, right? So I really suggest you, if you're interested in that, to take a look at that and try that on your own. One last thing I wanted to point out here is also, well, GitHub is a place where everything happens in the open source world, right? So here, one thing I want to call out is Azure Quick Start Templates. So just search in GitHub for Azure Quick Start, and you will see a lot of these scenarios, and again, the same story. So everything that's marked as 101 is really a scenario that you can reproduce with no prior knowledge. Okay, so you can go there and you can try it for yourself. There are also more advanced scenarios there that if you want to, but in general, yeah, like this is a good place to start. I really recommend you to take a look there. So with that, let me conclude my presentation. So thank you everyone for staying until the end of the presentation. Kopf und Krab, and thank you for having fun on Twitter.